Hello, this is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week, we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across all of Europe and beyond.
Hello, I am Tom Rowe from Free 103.9 in New York, the US of A, for the radio network. And you are about to hear a talk I gave last week at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, about Free 103.9's 10-year history, about transmission art and recent microcasting in the United States. The show ends with brief excerpted performances from Scanner, Thurston Moore, Gregory Whitehead, iSound, Espers, Matt Valentine and Erica Elder, and others from Free 103.9's Tune In at the Kitchen in April of 2004. Enjoy.
I guess it's most helpful probably to you all and whoever's listening if I start with, I guess, how Free 103.9 started. I guess before there was Free 103.9, I was living in Tampa, Florida, along with several other people who would eventually migrate to New York, where we started Free 103. We were living in Tampa, Florida in the early 90s, and the neighborhood we lived in was this historic Latin neighborhood that a bunch of artists lived in, buildings that had been abandoned for decades since they ran the interstate through the neighborhood and kind of, you know, ruined it in the 60s. And then artists started moving in a couple of shops. I opened a record store, and there was an independent bookstore, and that sort of commerce was going on. And the trouble was they had this yearly drunken Bacchanalia festival, and that became so popular. That was called Guavaween. It was once every Halloween. That a number of bars started opening. And within, I think, a year and a half, 150 bars had opened in this 10-block area, and basically pushed every artist out of the area because of increased rents, noise from, you know, until 4 in the morning, and the neighborhood, you know, was kind of empty, and always, the mainstream press had always said it was dangerous. It wasn't really dangerous, it was just nobody there. And then once the bars opened, it actually became dangerous because there's all these, you know, my car got broken into 6-7 times. There were fights because there were so many drunk people. And it just became this kind of a nightmare place to live. So we were all sitting around thinking about, you know, they've taken our neighborhood away from us. How can we do artistic things? How can we do interesting things again? And someone started talking about having we could create this virtual space on the radio. And one of our friends at the time was a ex-army guy who was into electronics, and he was trying to fix some old Korean War radio into a FM transmitter, and was having more and more success with that, and eventually got a transmitter good enough that we could get a couple blocks. And I remember when the temperature changed, the frequency changed, it was not very well made. You know, the temperature changed a couple degrees, and suddenly it was a cool day in Florida, and we were no longer on 89.1, we were now on 88.7, which is not a good thing to do, because generally there's another station already there where when you're drifting. So we kind of created this temporary autonomous zone on the airwaves in the neighborhood called Ybor City in Tampa. For a couple of years, the station lived in the record store that I had for a while. We had this loft, and it was kind of like Do the Right Thing or something, where there's that radio booth looking down with the glass over the community talking, and you know, we would go out with walkie-talkies and interview people on the street and feed it back to the station, and do all kinds of little things like that. I moved to New York about 8 or 9 months after that began, and the station continued moving around to a number of different places. At first, the FCC didn't find out about it, but other people that were running pirate stations found out about it. It was the early 90s, and there became this movement of thousands and thousands of pirate radio stations across the country for a number of different reasons. Mostly because the technology sort of got cheaper and easier, and there became three or four people in the country that were building small kits, small transmitters that were fairly reasonably priced that, you know, when it got cold, the frequency wouldn't shift. The equipment became better, and the engineers became better, and you could make smaller, very mobile transmission systems that almost anyone could put together and use. So the first person that found the station was called 87X in Tampa that we had. It was another pirate, and it was a guy that worked for a commercial radio station. And this is often the case, that people that are working for commercial radio stations are really into broadcasting, and sometimes they'll start little stations on their side just to experiment. I think that's true like a small percentage of the time. And much more common, though, is that the people that work for commercial stations are looking to find illegal transmitters and report them to the FCC. So we met him, and then after I left, there was actually a meeting at one point of seven different stations in Tampa, illegal stations. The cousin of the boxer Hector Macho Camacho had a station, a Latin station. There were, I think, three church stations that were in churches, mostly, I think, Hispanic and other minorities, that the kind of music and certainly the community was not represented on the radio dial or in the local newspapers or in local television stations. It just wasn't covered at all. So they created these little stations of their own. There is a very right-wing, very far right-wing libertarian station called Radio Free Lutz, because it was in this neighborhood of Lutz. But it was a, this guy was a case, his name was Lonnie Cobras, and he was a part-time freelance engineer for the FCC, I think during the late 80s. So he knew everyone in the Tampa FCC office and had some sort of ongoing feud with them because they continued to bust him in much more public and humiliating ways than the other stations. They were really out to get him. Eventually, he had to wear an ankle bracelet for a year for broadcasting. Florida has since gone craziest of all the states in the terms of, right now, you use a transmitter illegally, and it's a federal offense. The FCC has a very slow, long process before you before they contact you. They do all this research. All sorts of things happen. Florida has recently passed a law where it's a state law now to broadcast, and the police come and arrest you and put you in jail now for using transmitters in Florida. New Jersey has also recently passed this law for the first time. So they may be challenged in court because they're definitely going to be challenged in court and thrown out eventually because the state doesn't have a right to arrest someone if the state doesn't have a right to grant a license. They don't have a right to regulate a broadcasting license in any way. So this is the kind of thing that's definitely not legal, but has not been fully challenged to the courts yet. So anyway, in Tampa, there was a meeting at one time of these seven stations. The other station that I haven't mentioned yet was this fellow named Doug Brewer, who built transmitters. He built this transmitter here, which is a 40-watt. You can see it's pretty mobile. You can take it around, not hurt it. And he was building all sorts of transmitters. He was building thousands of them. And in 1997, this was about 94, 95, I was talking about when we started. After about a year or two, the stations became very popular. His station was actually turning up in the local ratings, the Arbitron ratings. So that was getting the other legal stations upset because they were getting beat by a station that didn't have a license. And he was also making thousands of transmitters and selling them across the country. So in October 97, the Wall Street Journal did a story about the proliferation of all these transmitters and who was making them. And they actually had the Wall Street Journal doesn't do photos on the front page. They do those little line sketches. And they had a little line sketch of Doug Brewer on the cover taunting the FCC. I think there was a quote from him saying, like, they're never going to catch me or, something like that. So 3 weeks later, they came with SWAT teams, and at 6 in the morning, busted his station, which was called the Party Pirate, busted the Radio Free Lute station with the far-right libertarian guy that worked for formerly worked for the FCC office, and busted 87X, the station that I was involved with previously. They alerted the TV stations the night before, so that at all three raids, the TV cameras were there. There were helicopters circling. Guys with big, heavy guns. It was quite a little media circus. And then this is just that got so much publicity, and there were so many positive stories about the illegal stations in Tampa, because they were the ones covering local issues, putting on different sorts of music. They weren't the same, 40 songs that you hear on the radio. It became so, hip to be a pirate station that I think it was 4 months after the raid, this new station comes on in Tampa and calls itself, I can't remember what it was called, Pirate something, and claimed it was two kids on a boat in the middle of Tampa Bay. I think they just played Led Zeppelin for 1 week, nothing but Led Zeppelin. But it was all a commercial. They were claiming they were a pirate station, but they were really a legal station. And they were introducing a new rock format or something, so they went and became a pirate for a week and just to get the publicity. So it just sort of showed you the circular route of from being a bad pirate to everyone wanting to be a pirate, what happens. So at the same time, across the country, just like in Tampa, where there was, seven different kinds of stations, there were all these other cities where there was the same sort of, different sort of stations. And in Santa Clara, California, the station there, the commercial legal station there, had broadcast the city council meetings. They stopped. So the pirate started broadcasting the city council meetings and got proclamations from the mayor and the city council saying this was a good thing and that we didn't want the station busted. In San Marcos, Texas, there was a great station called Kind Radio, pirate station, and they had a system set up so anytime anybody called into the station and the DJ, whoever it was at the time, answered the phone, you were immediately on the air. It made the music go down a little quieter so the people talked over, but anybody that called was immediately on the air. It became a very interactive, democratic station. San Marcos is this small town that's about halfway between San Antonio and Austin. And so there's a legal clear channel station that was licensed to the city of San Marcos. And in 1997, there was a big flood in San Marcos. And, everybody's houses are being damaged, people's lives are at risk. And the clear channel station that has the license to broadcast in San Marcos, Texas, is not saying a word about this flood as it's going on, because as always, it's not interested in the city that it's licensed to, San Marcos. It's sending everything at advertisers in Austin and San Antonio, because that's where all the money is. So as this flood's going on, the mayor is on the local pirate station telling people what to do, and everybody's listening to get help and calling in to explain what's going on. So this kind of thing happened all over the country at the time. And The pirates across the country sort of started banding together and creating loose confederations. I went to also 96 or 97 in Philadelphia. One of the biggest stations was Radio Mutiny at the time, and they morphed from being a pirate station into today they're now Prometheus Radio Group, which is a heavily lobbying group that bugs Congress to try to open up the airwaves and also help set up stations across the country and across the world. They just got back from Jordan. They've done other things in Africa, helped set up stations in Haiti and in Mexico, and all around the country. But at the time, they were running Radio Mutiny, and they had a conference of all the different pirates that could come from across the country, and they actually had the head FCC enforcement guy come and speak at the conference among all the pirates. Had seminars throughout the weekend of how you can improve your distance or make directional antennas instead of omnidirectional antennas that focus on one area of coverage or another. All these sort of things. And then the following year, everyone met in, all the different pirates from around the country met in Washington, and the Prometheus folks got a parade license, and we paraded through legally through Washington, D.C., past the FCC office with the transmitters going, and all these little guys looking out the window at the, what was going on in the street, and then over to the National Association of Broadcasters office, lobbying office, which was down, is right down the street from the FCC. The National Association of Broadcasters is the lobby group for the corporate broadcasters that pretty much tells the FCC what to do and when to do it. And so a bunch of the pirates, we went there and protested. I think somebody took down the NAB's flag and put up a pirate flag and ran off, and much fun was had. And all that really was part of this effort. Basically what happened was there's all these stations started. In 97 we started Free 103.9 in New York. And by that time, you know, there were all these stations that were doing political lobbying, different, everybody's doing their own sort of thing in their own neighborhood, and we sort of said, well, there's not a station that's kind of pushing the boundaries of what radio can be creatively, and what, you know, doing different things besides just playing DJ, playing song, back announcing, and, you know, occasionally having some news content or something like that. So we started Free 103 and kind of took it a little different tack than a lot of different pirate stations. We, I guess for the first 6 months, we did have one location that we did, we used every, and we just did it every Sunday, and from a certain time to a certain time, and we put up posters on the poles in the neighborhood, in Brooklyn, it's neighborhood of Williamsburg. We put up flyers where people could actually listen. And then after the 6 months, we started moving around from place to place, and the station became almost sort of a library where somebody was having an event at their loft or their building one weekend, they would borrow all the equipment and set up and broadcast from there for the weekend. We would put up flyers in the area right around where we knew people could actually receive and listen to the signal and not worry about, you know, alerting the media or, you know, trying to do some big campaign to get people to listen. It was just on the poles right where you could hear it, and then you could tune in. And it how far the signal went varied greatly from whether we were on top of a 10-story building or whether we were on top of a 2-story building, because the way FM works, it's not so much about power as it is about the height of your antenna and how far. FM is a largely line of sight kind of transmission. So we did all sorts of things from different places. We did a video voyeurism festival one weekend where all the videos that were compiled in the festival were on the subject of voyeurism, and we showed them outside on a public space. And then we had radios with the headphones that people could listen to the content, but if passersby were just, you know, going through what was going on, they could just look at the images and figure out if they wanted to be a part of it or not. We did another kind of DJ party on top of the Williamsburg Bridge where we brought a generator up and had this, this was, of course, before September 11th. You couldn't do this now, but there's a, the Williamsburg Bridge in New York has a public walkway that's above the roadways, and basically, at that point, you could make as much noise as you want, and nobody would hear anything or know anything was going on because the subway and all the cars were going on below. So it's kind of a perfect spot and for that. And then, just for several years, we just kept bouncing from place to place, you know, which whatever theme of the weekend was, whether it was free jazz or people experimenting with the radio or taking shortwave signals and reconfiguring them, or all sorts of different activities. Eventually, I guess it was about the year 2000 or 2001, we sort of were coming together more as less of a loose collective and more of a group of people that were really interested in working with the airwaves and seeing what different things we could do with them. And it became this core group of first, I think it was eight And now I think we're up to about 18 or 20 different artists who are, we all call transmission artists, that somehow they work with the radio spectrum in their work in some way. That it's not just limited to, you know, we started with just an FM signal, but the artists that we work with aren't just limited to that. Some of them work with all kinds of other frequencies. Some of them work with like light, video, all sorts of different parts of the radio dial or radio spectrum. Then we started doing more, we got a couple of core ideas of different specific things we could do over and over again, and I guess the main one that we're probably most known for, if anything, is called Tune In. And it's a show where we set up five or six different transmitters, usually, and have performances on all five or six transmitters simultaneously throughout the evening. So that, like we did one at the Kitchen in New York in 2004, and I think throughout the night about 60 people performed at different times, at about five or six at a time. There's all kinds of people: Marina Rosenfeld, Michelle McGuy, Thurston Moore, Gregory Whitehead, Scanner, all sorts of different people, and. The thing is that in when the audience comes in, there's absolutely no sound in the space. You an audience member, when they come in the door, gets a radio with headphones and a card that explains at 6 p.m. this person's playing on this freak at 88.7, and at 8 p.m. this person's playing at on 89.3 or whatever the frequencies are. So it's a silent sound show, which is a strange thing and creates sort of a very uncomfortableness is the right word among people that are coming to a show, because there's all these like cliches of when you go to a sound performance, you stare straight ahead at the person who's, you know, usually not doing very much with their wrist or something. where in this case, you stare ahead and occasionally maybe you talk to the person next to you about the thing you're seeing. In the tune-in, when you go to talk to the person next to you about the thing you're seeing or listening to, the person next to you is probably listening to something else. We really like that you have to traverse the entire radio dial with your radio and your headphones during this show, and you kind of, the idea is it gives you an idea of what is on the radio and what could be on the radio if the radio had more, took more chances about its content. I guess that we dim that light again, or
for maximum oratorical pleasure, tune to the following frequencies on your FM dial: 88.7 FM, 89.3 FM, 91.9 FM, 99.9 FM, 103.9 FM.
Time and schedule information, please refer to the program provided. As you will, but I think we can candor. There's no point of hitting anybody with a political obligation here, and I think. Thank you.
is sad over his miserable condition. He does nothing to change it. Sadness doesn't change anything. It's only when he...
So you want to talk about squee?
What channel are you listening to?
91.9, Carlos Gifoni.
Which channel are you listening to?
Scanner 104.0, Scanner.
Do you like it?
Love it.
Galings of Gailey, warnings those St. Bethy's Dailies and Southend. The Joe Sabo and double low, synopsis 011 double to ISO, low, moving, nine moving spinoge, eastward.
Hello, this is a show from Radio. We're a group.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radio.fm.
Hello.